fuck some fool, and then ponder over whether or not I would allow them to get back together or break that shit up again. There wasn't any doubt in my mind that I could put a stop to it, if I so desired. It was too damn easy to just pick up a man. No man was likely to turn down pussy if the woman looked halfway attractive. I wanted a challenge, so I went to this gay club called the Milk Farm, which I took to mean that there were a lot of men up in there milking each other's dicks. Shame on it all. When I first walked in, some of them might have assumed that I was a transvestite, but upon closer inspection, you could see their chins practically hit the floor. I had always assumed that some women hang out at gay bars for whatever reason, but this one was all male, except for me. They were grinding all up on each other, tonguing each other down, and my pussy was getting wetter by the second. True sex fiends get turned on by anything sexual, even two dogs humping. I hopped on a vacant bar stool and waited for the bartender, a midget in a thong and a leather hat who walked on top of the bar instead of behind it. He snarled at me and asked me what I wanted. I said, "A blowjob, just like everyone else in here." I laughed at my joke, but he didn't like it. "Don't front. I'm sure you know how to make it." He teetered away to get my drink. The two men, or queens, rather, that I was sitting between were hideous. I wouldn't have fucked either one of them for bone marrow. I started scanning the club for other prospects. I realized that it would prove too difficult to pick out which ones were prospective fucks, the ones that went both ways, the ones who were married and in there on the down low. That was the beauty of being me, because I didn't really exist, at least not on paper, or as far as anyone was concerned. I could do whatever the hell I wanted, whenever the hell I wanted, and no one could touch me. Too many people hold back from doing the things they yearn to do. They are too busy worrying about what so-and-so might think. On the other hand, I didn't give a fuck what people thought. That's why there was no hesitation on my part to do what I did next. The midget finally came back with my drink. I did my little hands behind my back trick and gulped it down. Just then, the DJ put on Fever, and it was on. I climbed up on the bar, started dancing to the music and singing. Then, I started stripping. Of course, the assholes were the initial ones to start yelling shit like, "You need to sit down, bitch. Get that slut off the bar. No one wants to see a whore stripping." And, "Did it suddenly get a little fishy in here?" I ignored them all. I was waiting for that one person who defended me, because I knew he would be the one open to what I had in mind. Sure enough, right before the song ended, I heard someone yell out, "Leave her alone! Let the diva do her thing!" The strobe lights on the ceiling were irritating, and I shielded my forehead with my hand so I could make out someone in the back. The only thing I could see was that he was extremely tall and dark-skinned. The song ended and no one applauded, but one smart aleck said, "Great! Now get the hell out and go to a club where people like kitties." I played it cool and sat back down at the bar. Within 5 minutes, there was a tap on my shoulder, and it was him. Men are so damn predictable. It turned out that Hugh, which I'm quite sure was not his real name, was married with 4 kids and trying to find himself. He said that he had experimented with men in college and had never gotten his curiosity out of his system. I asked him did he take it up the ass or give it. He said give it, and that was cool with me because I had no intention of fucking a man who would take one up the ass. I made sure he had a condom, invited him to step in the back into the bathroom stall, and then I let him experiment with the freak and give it to me up the ass. Poor Joan was going to wake up the next morning wondering what the hell. Chapter 36. Junquenette. When I arrived in the parking garage at Marcella's office building, it was difficult to find a space. There was a convention meeting at the hotel across the street, so a lot of people had used Marcella's building as an overflow parking area. I had to go all the way up to the 6th level and park on the roof. It was nippy, even for mid-October, and I went to search in my trunk for a jacket. I found one and was closing my trunk when I heard someone say from behind me, "Well, hello again." I didn't recognize the voice, but when I turned, I was face to face with Zoe. Hello. It's nice to see you again, she said, and I'm glad we ran into each other here. I take it that means you decided to use the card that I gave you. I smiled uneasily. Yes, I did. Thanks for the recommendation. It's not a problem. She came closer and sat a shopping bag that she was carrying down on the ground. I just finished up a session with Marcella. I glanced at my watch. And I'm next up to bat. We both giggled. Marcella really is wonderful, and she's helping me out tremendously. That's good. She offered me her hand. We've never formally been introduced. I'm Zoe Renard. I shook her hand. I already knew your name, from the meetings and all. I'm Jonquinette Pierce. Beautiful name. So is yours. There was an uncomfortable silence for a moment, and then Zoe said, I'm not trying to get in your business, but I feel like I have to say something. Go ahead. Life throws us a lot of curveballs. We can run from them, or we can catch them and throw them back. I never quite thought of it that way, I said. Curveballs, huh? I don't know if you've ever heard me actually give a testimonial at a meeting, but to make a long story short, sex almost killed me. Literally. I lowered my eyes to the ground to avoid eye contact. I'm sorry to hear that. I fought back. I was determined not to give up my life that easily, even when everything seemed hopeless. Looking back on it, I can't believe how many people were hurt, some even killed, because of my actions. Killed? I asked in disbelief, looking back up at her to see if she was serious. Yes, killed, because of my issues with sexuality. She leaned on my trunk. I used to blame myself. I just couldn't deal with it. But you're okay now? Most of the time. I won't sugarcoat it. The memories will never go away. Not ever. If I have to eventually pay for my sins, then so be it. I've come to terms with that. For now, though, I just intend to live my life with my husband and kids. They give me all the love and encouragement that I need. I didn't want to be nosy, but I felt like I just had to ask. What caused you to be like that? Addicted to sex. Are you really addicted? She came back at me. My situation's a little bit more complicated than that, I responded. I wouldn't say that I'm addicted to sex. It's more like someone else that I'm extremely close to is addicted to it, or rather uses sex to prove a point. Zoe seemed confused. I won't ask you to elaborate. To answer your question, there were some incidents dating back to my childhood that triggered everything after that. Incidents? Yes, incidents that I had buried. We often bury things in our minds. The human body is a very intricate thing, an amazing thing. And sometimes we are things and have done things we can't remember. I laughed. In my case, that's definitely true. Did you have something happen in your childhood? She asked me. I had a ton of things happen in my childhood. I was bullied, tormented, teased, and treated like crap by all the other kids. What about your parents? I have two loving parents, but they had issues because of me. In fact, something I did made them divorce. I'm sorry to hear that. Yeah, well, they are meeting me here today. I thought about Daddy's car being at my place overnight and added, I'm hoping that there may be some chance for them to reconcile, even after all these years. If it's in God's plan, they will, Zoe said, looking up at the sky. So you're religious? I asked. I didn't used to be, at least not much, but I am now. My husband and I take our children to church every Sunday and pray together every night. That's good. I glimpsed at my watch again. I really have to go before I'm late. I wish we could continue the conversation some other time. Zoe took a business card out of her purse and handed it to me. Call me. I scanned the card. You're an arts dealer, huh? Yes, all African-American art. She smiled and touched my hand. Take care, Jonquinette, and if you ever need anything, just reach out to me. Marcella understands a lot, and I'm sure she will help you get through this, but she's never walked in our shoes. She picked up her bag. When you feel comfortable enough, I hope you will consider coming back to the meetings. She eyed me uneasily. You and your friend. As Zoe walked off to get into her car, and I walked to the bank of elevators, I wondered about her last comment. Had she figured me out that easily? Marcella. Working with Jonquinet Pierce had turned out to be much more than I had bargained for. Just like every professional, I welcomed challenges in my career, but this one had taken on a personal edge. I had only one similar experience in my entire career. When I was fresh out of medical school, I interned at a psychiatric hospital in New York State under the guidance of Dr. Michael Driggs. He was one of the most respected psychiatrists in the country and had recently succumbed to colon cancer. Dr. Driggs had a patient named Constance who suffered from multiple personality disorder. I sat in on his therapy sessions with her, and it was nothing short of amazing. While Constance had already pretty much figured out that she had at least 3 other personalities, it turned out that she had at least 40. Day after day, month after month, we met with them one at a time. Dr. Driggs introduced me to the technique of integration, where he basically had lengthy discussions with each personality to see what their individual issues or grievances, so to speak, were, and how they could be solved. Constance had been the victim of severe neglect and physical abuse as a child. Because of that, she developed various personalities to deal with situations that she could not deal with. There was Bernie, who was an older gentleman. Bernie emerged when Constance felt threatened. He spoke in a heavy tone, and his body language was intimidating. Rhonda was the little child who emerged when Constance was feeling lonely and abandoned, which she had been by her parents at the age of 4. She ended up in foster homes, and unfortunately, each one of the homes harbored a form of evil. Her first set of foster parents used to beat Constance with a belt and lock her in the cellar for days on end. The second set used to make her eat dog food while they dined on fine cuisine, courtesy of state funding. She and the other 6 foster children in the home eventually ran away together, seeking help from the local police, and the state had no choice but to find new homes for all of them and press charges against the couple who had made them suffer. The list of traumas in Constance's life went on and on until she simply could not function in society. She checked herself into the hospital, pleading desperately for help and some form of supervision. She did not trust herself or what she might be driven to do next. As I sat in my office waiting for Jonquinet and her parents to arrive for their first joint therapy session, I couldn't imagine what had triggered her MPD and how Jude had been created. Other than the fact that she had been bullied as a child, which didn't sit quite well with me, there was no other obvious reasoning behind the events that had transpired. Jude herself didn't realize that she was crying out for help by sleeping with various men. She assumed that promiscuity was a display of power, but nothing was further from the truth. Self-degradation is no better than someone else doing the degrading. I had a general idea of how I planned to proceed with Jonquinet's healing process, but first I wanted to meet her parents and see how they interacted with her. Jonquinet showed up first. I was glad that she came in separately because it gave us an opportunity to chat alone. After she came into my inner office and sat down, I asked her, "So how are things?" "I can't tell you how much better I feel," she said. "Really? Why is that?" She leaned up and whispered, "Mason and I did it. We made love." She giggled with delight and I faked a smile. I wasn't so sure getting sexually involved with Mason Copeland at that point in time was such a great idea. It might just serve to complicate matters. "Jonquinet, if you are happy, I'm happy for you." "Thanks." She leaned back in the chair. "Oh, guess who I just ran into in the parking lot?" That was a no-brainer since she just left for my office. "Zoe?" "Yes, she's so sweet. She even gave me her card in case I want to talk." "That's great. Zoe is a very compassionate woman, and you may need to hear some of the things she has to say." I meant every word of that previous statement. In many ways, Zoe and Jonquinet were identical, and in many other ways they were not. Zoe had a sexual addiction, while Jonquinet, or Jude, rather, used sex to make a statement. Jonquinet glanced at my wall clock. I wonder why my parents are late. No sooner had she said that when a knock came at the door. A stunning-looking couple entered, and my first thought was that they seemed way too happy for two people who had just found out that their only child they share together was ill. Junquenet jumped up and made the introductions. Dr. Spencer, these are my parents, Henry and Meredith Pierce. I shook both of their hands. It's very nice to meet you. Henry replied, same here. I just wish it was under better circumstances. Please have a seat, I said, directing them to my leather couch. Junquenet sat on the chaise, and I sat in my armchair. Meredith said, sorry we're late. Henry just got back from dropping Flower back off in North Carolina. Flower was here? Junquenet asked, obviously stunned. Meredith laughed uncomfortably. Don't be silly, Precious. Of course Flower was here. You spent the day with her. Junquenet's mouth fell open, and the rest of us came to the same conclusion simultaneously. Henry said, oh, shit. You mean my baby girl spent the afternoon with that wench? No one responded, and Junquenet decided to lie down on the chaise instead of just sitting there. Meredith said, Junquenet, does that mean that you don't know about our news? What news? Junquenet asked. Henry cleared his throat. The news about your mama getting back together with me. I studied Junquenet's reaction. She clamped her eyes shut and sighed. No, I didn't have a clue. Meredith folded her hands on her lap, but I could still see them trembling. She glimpsed at me uneasily. I guess we should talk about that later. We're here for Junquenet. I waited for Junquenet to make any comments about the revelation. When she remained silent, I moved on. As you know, Junquenet is suffering from multiple personality disorder, otherwise known as MPD. It is also commonly referred to as dissociative identity disorder. Ideas about MPD date back to the 1800s. This is not a new concept. Meredith asked, so what exactly is it, and how can we stop it? Basically, Junquenet has at least one alter personality who was created to free her from the memories and experiences that were too difficult for her to rationally deal with. Henry said, so, are we talking about a mental illness? Is she insane? I shook my head. No, Junquenet is not insane. That was her assumption at first as well. Junquenet is perfectly capable of leading a normal life without having to drown herself in pills or being hospitalized. What she has done, in a nutshell, is devise an innovative survival technique. Meredith shifted in her seat. You said at least one alter. Does that mean there are more? Even as I made eye contact with her mother, I could sense Junquenet staring at me. That is a possibility, but as of now, the only one we need to concern ourselves with is Jude. She's obviously the most powerful and the one causing all the problems. Henry shook his head in dismay. I still can't believe that wench was left alone with Flower. Junquenet sat back up on the chaise. I have no idea what you're talking about, but why would you have let me babysit Flower knowing my situation? Junquenet's parents glared at each other, as I could sense their guilt. Junquenet continued, until we get this all straightened out, don't dare do that again. Flower is a sweetheart, and if she meets up with Jude while she's angry, there's no telling what might happen. She paused and asked, you couldn't tell it wasn't me? No, not that time, Meredith quickly responded. I won't lie. Looking back on things, there were times when I should have known something was terribly wrong. Like that time when we had dinner recently and you called me a whore. Henry glared at Junquenet. You called your mama a whore? Junquenet smacked her lips. It wasn't me, Daddy. You're still missing the point. I've never intentionally set out to hurt anyone. I would never call mama a whore. That's disrespectful and you didn't raise me that way. But did we raise Jude that way? Meredith asked. She covered her face with her hands. This is so confusing. Junquenet got up off the chaise and walked over to the sofa. Her parents made room for her to sit between them. Each took one of her hands. You're right, Junquenet said. This is confusing. She looked right at me. Marcella, what's next? We get to know each other, I responded. That's all I want to do today. You've told me a lot, but only your parents can fill in the blanks of times you don't remember. I have several questions I need to ask. Henry gripped Junquenet's hand tighter and glanced into my eyes. Ask away. I had blocked out the next 3 hours for Junquenet and her parents, and we made good use of every minute of it. We talked about her childhood, and Junquenet seemed troubled to the point where I thought she might lose it a few times, as she heard firsthand accounts of things she never did. Chapter 37 Junquenet.
Are you ready?
Mason asked me when I opened my door. We have a tight schedule to keep. I blushed. Yes, I'm ready. Just let me grab a lightweight jacket. I was kind of worn out from the therapy session, but nothing would have stopped me from spending quality time with Mason. In many ways, being with Mason was probably the best therapy of all. First, we went to Atlanta History Center. I learned so much about a city where I had lived for several years. Mason said it was a shame for people to live someplace and have the tourists actually visit more of the museums and attractions. We walked the 33 acres of garden, woodlands, and nature trails after visiting the inside exhibits. Watching the children running through the gardens made me suddenly think about actually having a child one day. In a perfect world, it would happen. We left the center and headed to the High Museum of Art. There was an exhibit of African-American art, so we had chosen the perfect day to go there. We walked up and down the ramps, taking in all the beautiful paintings and sculptures. There were several by an artist named Quentin Matthews. I had heard that name someplace, maybe in a news story, but I couldn't recall all the details. Either way, his work was magnificent. In fact, I was so moved by the intricate details of his work that I stopped by the gift shop and picked up a reproduction of one of them, entitled Forever in Love. I was getting tired, but I was determined to hang, so when Mason suggested going to Zoo Atlanta next, I was all for it. We went to the zoo in Grant Park and saw the giant pandas Lun Lun and Yang Yang, the zoo's main attraction. Afterward, we went to the petting zoo and had a ball playing with the animals. When we left, I just knew we were headed home, but we drove out to Stone Mountain Park, and it wasn't crowded at all for that time of year. I had always wanted to go there but had no one to go with. Ever since I had lost the baby fat back in high school, I had managed to stay in good shape by watching my diet for the most part. Mason was in great shape, as I had found out firsthand when we made love. I still blushed every time I thought about it. We opted against the cable car, and the 1.3-mile hike up the side of the mountain was a breeze. We walked through a canyon of boulders that were covered by chewing gum. It was quite a hilarious sight. We got to the top, more than 1,600 feet above sea level, and took in the spectacular view. We found a cozy spot where no one else was hovering around and made out for about 30 minutes. It was incredible. It was getting close to sunset, so we decided we needed to head back down while the visibility was still good. We did have time to go pedal boating right quick, and we ended up having a race with a couple of teenage boys. We beat them big time, and were out of the boat and chilling on the dock by the time they were tied up. Mason and I went back home just long enough for us to go to our respective apartments, shower, and change. Then we headed back out again. I took 3 vitamins first. The shower almost put me out, I was so exhausted. We ended up at Sherry, an eclectic sushi bar on Peachtree Street. We had the Tuni Tataki, which was mouth-watering, and shared a glass of American wine. We topped it off with a bowl of cherry cobbler, which we also shared. The inside of the place was classy and completely decorated in red. Apparently, it used to be a residence that dated back to the early 1920s. By that point, I was tired, full, and ready to go back home and cuddle. But Mason wouldn't hear of it. He said, "You need to make up for lost time, Junquenet. There are so many things you should have already experienced that you haven't. Let me help you create more memories. Positive memories." I blushed and said, "Okay, let's go for it." "Then let's go relax and have some fun," he said, taking my hand and pulling me out of the restaurant. Our last stop of the evening turned out to be anything but relaxing. We ended up at the Punchline. where Sir Laugh-a-Lots was performing. He was one of my all-time favorites. I fell in love with his humor way back when he used to star on Bet You I Can Make You Laugh. Mason had called ahead and made reservations, so our little wooden table was close to the front. I almost lost my drink when he told a joke about a woman running into her doctor's office, screaming and complaining about having too much hair on her breast. When the doctor asked her how much the hair was growing, she said from her breast down to her penis. That was too funny. We spent a couple of hours laughing so hard that we were brought to tears, and then Mason asked, "Ready to go home?" I eyed him seductively. "Your home or my home?" He kissed me on the forehead. "Choose." "Well, since you treated me to a bubble bath last time, reciprocity is in order. Want to christen my tub?" "Absolutely." That's exactly what we did. Chapter 38. Marcella. It was time. I was determined not to let Junquenette and her parents leave my office until I exposed the truth. I had grown to care about Junquenette, as I did all my patients, but there was something fragile about her that I felt the need to shield. It was actually ironic. I was beginning to identify with the reasoning behind Jude's actions. Junquenette was the kind of spirit that people would naturally be drawn toward to shelter. They all arrived at the same time, instead of separately like the previous session. "Come on in and have a seat," I said as they walked in single file. I went to the outer office and told my receptionist to put the phones on night and go ahead and leave for the day. There was no point in her staying since I had no more patients scheduled, and I was not going to take any calls. When I came back in, they were all seated, Junquenette on the chaise and her parents on the couch. I sat in the armchair and placed a tape recorder in the middle of the coffee table. I hit record. "Is this really necessary?" Meredith Pierce asked sarcastically. "Who's going to end up hearing that?" "No one will hear it unless I have your permission. This is simply for me to take notes with and possibly to play back for Junquenette." I glanced at Junquenette and added, "Just in case she misses something." Junquenette nodded. "I understand what you mean. You plan to call out Jude, don't you?" I didn't hesitate to answer. "Yes, I do." Henry started panicking. "Say what? You're going to summon that wench? This is crazy." "Please, Daddy," Junquenette exclaimed. "You promised you would help me." "And I will, but I'm not so sure about this," he replied. He eased back on the couch and seemed to calm down some. "All right. If this is the way it has to be, then let's get it over with." I decided to let them know right away that there's a possibility that Jude won't come out at all. She's revealed herself to Mason once that we know of, and to me once, but that's about it. She was obviously around when Flower was visiting, but she pretended to be Junquenette and not herself. Henry shook his head. "I still can't get over that. Something tragic could have happened." Junquenette glared at him and looked irritated. "Well, I hope that never happens again." Meredith spoke up. "It won't happen again, Precious. Your daddy and I have already discussed that at length." "Why don't we just all relax?" I suggested. I turned to Junquenette. "Jude, I know that you can hear me. You're always around." Meredith sighed loudly. I looked at her and put my index finger to my lips. "Please remain perfectly quiet for now. We don't want to irritate her."
"Who gives a shit if we irritate her?" Henry lashed out suddenly. "This entire situation is that wench's fault."
Junquenette jumped up off the chaise, walked over to the couch, and slapped Henry across the face.
"I've had just about enough of you calling me a wench, you motherfucking bastard."
Both Henry and Meredith were shocked. Henry rubbed his face and looked like he wanted to say something but didn't. Instead, he glanced at me like he was searching for answers, and I nodded for him to remain quiet. I stood up. "Jude, it's nice to see you again."
"Save the bullshit, you bitch. I told you before that I wasn't going anyplace, so all this therapy shit is a waste of time. The queen bitch and her flunky can't make me go away either."
Meredith asked with disdain,
"Who are you calling a queen bitch?"
"You, bitch. You."
Jude screamed.
All of Joan's life, all you've ever cared about is yourself. Look at you now. Joan asked the two of you to help her, and what do? Start fucking again and talking about marriage as if that's gonna solve something. Well, fuck all of you.
Jude, try to calm down, I said, walking closer to her and putting my hand on her shoulder. Let's just sit back down and talk about this calmly.
No, hell no. Hell fucking no.
Jude started pacing the floor.
I decided to come out for one reason and one reason only, to inform all of you that you can't win. You'll never win.
Why are you doing this? Meredith asked, on the brink of tears. Why are you doing this to my baby?
Your baby?
Jude put her hands on her hips. Joan never mattered to you.
Not really. All you cared about was putting up a pretense. You wanted everyone to think that you had the perfect marriage and the perfect little daughter, even though you didn't. You only care about material things, just like your two fucking sisters.
Meredith started crying harder.
I can't take this. I love Joan Cornette. I always have. You're sick.
I'm not sick, you bitch.
Jude sat down in the middle of the coffee table with her legs spread open facing them. She lifted her skirt and started fingering herself.
Does this make you sick, bitch?
I decided to be a whore just like you. The only difference is your gold-digging ass has been fucking men for what they can give you all these years, and I fucked them for the hell of it. Henry stood up and headed for the door.
I won't sit here and watch this a second longer.
Jude said, What's wrong, Daddy? You can't handle it, so you're just gonna cut and run out on us like you did all those years ago? Henry turned around and glared at Jude.
This is all your fucking fault, wench. You set me up. I never even met that prostitute.
Jude started laughing.
Okay, fine. Since you've all figured it out already, I confess. I did it, and I'm damn proud of it, too. You tried to get help for Joan, which meant trying to get rid of me, and I had to do something to stop you. Is that why you stabbed me?
He got all the way up in Jude's face.
It was you who stabbed me, wasn't it?
An expression of fear came across Jude's face. It was brief, but I saw it. I'm not sure if Meredith and Henry even picked up on it. Meredith stopped crying and looked from one of them to the other.
Stabbed? Henry, what are you talking about?
Jude took two steps back from him.
Yeah, what do you mean by that? Don't you get cute with me, you cunt!
Henry started unbuttoning his shirt.
You know exactly what I'm talking about.
He took his shirt off and pointed to a tiny scar over his shoulder blade.
I'm talking about this.
Meredith stood up, came over to him, and touched it.
That's where you accidentally cut yourself with a pocket knife. I remember when you came home with it bandaged up.
Henry smirked. That was a story I made up to cover up for who I thought was Joan Cornette. Now I know it wasn't her at all.
What are you talking about, Henry?
Meredith prodded. I didn't want the police to file charges against her. I knew that after all the incidents in her past that they'd allowed to slip through, one more might cause them to lock her up in juvenile detention.
Jude hissed at him. You're a lying bastard. I never stabbed you. You showed up at my office one day, stormed in like a hurricane, and started talking crazy. Just like you are now, as a matter of fact. I told you that it was time to get some help. Your solution was to pick up a letter opener off my desk and stab me in the shoulder with it. I bet you were aiming for my heart, but I moved out of the way just in time.
We had definitely reached a crossroads. I remained silent and allowed the situation to play itself out. Jude grabbed my shoulders and started screaming.
I didn't do that, Marcella. I didn't.
I didn't respond. I just pushed her away from me. Part of me wanted to embrace her, but I needed her to get angry. I had to allow whatever was destined to happen to occur. Meredith grabbed her chest and looked like she was about to faint.
My baby stabbed someone? Her own daddy! Oh, my God!
She fell on her knees and started crying all over again.
This is my fault. I should have listened to you, Henry. We should have gotten her help way back then.
Jude yanked Meredith back up off the floor by her hair.
Get up, queen bitch. He's lying through his teeth. It never happened. He cut his own ass with a pocket knife, just like he said. He's just trying to fuck with me for some reason, but I won't tolerate it.
Jude shoved Henry, practically knocking him back onto the chaise longue, and repeated,
"I won't tolerate it." "Jude," I called out to her. "Jude, look at me."
When she turned to face me, I said, "What if he isn't lying?"
"But he is lying," she insisted. "I didn't stab him, and Junquenette sure as shit didn't. She wouldn't have the nerve. Besides, I've always been here, and I know if she'd done something like that. Hell, I would have been happy about it. I'm telling you, if I'd stabbed that bastard, I would admit it in a heartbeat. In fact, if you have a letter opener, I'll stab him now. He deserves it for lying on me."
"Look," Henry stated angrily, "I'm telling you that Jude stabbed me. It's all water under the bridge now, and I still have no intention of pressing charges, but this all needs to come out. I'm sick of lying." Something changed on Jude's face. A calmness came over it. Then that was replaced with fury. "Sick of lying?" She faced Henry. "You're sick of lying?"
"Yes," he responded. "The truth needs to come out."
I couldn't agree with you more. She said in a voice that I didn't recognize. Henry didn't seem to notice the voice change, but Meredith did.
"What happened to your voice?" Meredith asked.
Jude smirked at her, but didn't respond. "Nothing happened to my voice." I walked up behind her and whispered in her ear, "Who are you?" She turned, gave me a smile that was more scary than pleasant, and brushed past me. She sat down in the armchair where I had been sitting and pressed the stop button on the tape recorder. "We won't need this anymore." I wanted to make a move to turn it back on, but decided against it. It was obvious nothing critical would be said as long as it was on. I asked again, this time louder, "Who are you?"
Henry exclaimed, "You mean there's another one?"
"Shh, don't say anything," I cautioned him. "Why don't you tell me your name? I know you're not Junquenette, and you're not Jude. So who are you?" She rubbed her eyes like she was tired. "I don't have a name," she finally responded.
"Everyone has a name," I insisted.
"Not me." "Then make one up," I said. "I need to call you something." She thought about it for a moment and said, "Just call me Jetta. I think that sounds mad cool."
"Okay, Jetta. Tell me, were you the one who stabbed Henry in the shoulder?"
Jetta grimaced. "Damn right I did it."
Henry asked, "Why did you stab me?"
Jetta ignored him and started staring at Meredith. "You thought you knew everything that was going on in your house, didn't you?"
"What do you mean?" Meredith asked. "Please tell me what you mean."
"Did you ever suspect?" Jetta kept her eyes fixated on Meredith, but nodded in Henry's direction. "Did you ever realize that he was a pedophile?"
Henry collapsed onto the chaise while Meredith pulled herself up off the floor. She walked over to us and got close enough to smell Jetta's breath.
"Pedophile?"
Chapter 39 Junquenette. After I was filled in on what had happened when Jude took over in Marcella's office, I couldn't find any words to express my feelings. I heard the tape, which cut off at the point where Jetta decided it would be cut off. Jetta? Things were getting more confusing by the second, but I wasn't so much shocked about Jetta as I was about what she accused Daddy of doing. In fact, I tried to defend him, but he admitted that he had molested me as a child. He said that his father had molested him, which is why he never took me to visit my paternal grandparents. After the Thanksgiving Day fiasco, Daddy came to the conclusion that he deserved to be alone, and that karma had caught up to him. He returned to North Carolina and reopened his father's auto repair shop as a means to punish himself for his own sins. A constant reminder of his sins would be his fate. Marcella, Mommy, and I listened intently as he described everything he had been through. He said it was a vicious cycle because his father, my grandfather, had been molested by his own uncle as a child. I still couldn't imagine not remembering the things my father related in that therapy session. How he would do things to me when Mama wasn't around,
mostly when she was out spending money on things we didn't need. Marcella explained that Jetta had taken the abuse for me, and Jude had become my protector, even though Jude never knew about the abuse. She also speculated that while she rarely made an appearance, Jetta was the only one who really controlled things. She prevented Jude from making me completely disappear. My main concern wasn't even for me, but was for Flower. Daddy assured me that he hadn't molested her, but admitted that he had experienced some urges. Marcella told him that he had no choice but to come clean with Allison, Flower's mother. She told him that there was always the chance that he would relapse into a moment of weakness and shatter yet another young life. Needless to say, Mama called the wedding off. She left, stating that she was catching a cab home so she could take a tranquilizer and lie down. I told her that I would come by later to check on her. I couldn't take any more for one day either. I told Daddy and Marcella that I had to leave. Marcella asked Daddy to stay behind so they could talk. I also caught a cab home since Daddy had driven to Marcella's office. When I arrived, Mason was just returning home from work. He saw me get out of the cab and must have been able to tell that I had been to hell and back. He came to me and I collapsed in his arms in tears. Mason and I spent the next few hours talking about everything that had been revealed earlier that day. As usual, he wasn't judgmental at all. On the contrary, he cried when I told him about Daddy and the pedophilia. He also expressed concern for Flower, and I told him that I would go to my grave protecting her if I had to. In fact, I planned to call her mother the next day and tell her everything myself. I didn't want to risk leaving it up to Daddy. Mason pampered me by running me a bath and giving me a deep tissue massage afterward. I was steadily learning that he was a man of many talents. Mason made love to me slowly from behind up against my bedroom wall, so passionately that I wept, because I couldn't imagine him still wanting me after finding out yet something else devastating about my past. It was late when I had Mason drop me off at Mama's condo, close to 2 in the morning. I used my key and entered without knocking. She was knocked out in her bed, and I stood over her for a moment, listening to make sure she was still breathing. For a second I was scared that she had taken an overdose. That I would not have been able to handle. I climbed into bed and took her into my arms. She woke up, saw me, and asked, "Is it you, Junquenette?" It was a shame that she had to ask. "Yes, it's me, Mama. Get some rest." We both fell into much-needed sleep. The next morning, Daddy was banging on the door by 9. He was taken aback when I answered instead of Mama. His eyes fell to the carpeted hallway. "Junquenette, I'm so sorry, baby. How can I ever make it up to you?" "You can't." I turned and he followed me into the living room. Mama's still sleeping, and I have no intention of waking her up. The longer she stays asleep, the longer she doesn't have to deal with reality. I rolled my eyes at him and sat down. I guess I'm an expert at that, huh? Falling asleep, or rather letting someone else take over so I don't have to deal with reality. Daddy sat down across from me. "I just wanted to come by to say that I'm leaving today. I plan to stop by your place next." "Well, now you don't have to waste a trip," I stated sarcastically. Then I caught myself. "Daddy, I won't pretend that I'm not angry. That would be nothing but a performance. I'm angry, but at the same time, I understand that you are just as much a victim as me." "That's still no excuse," Daddy said. "I hurt you, and that's unforgivable. In time, I hope that I can forgive you, but I know that I'll never forget. At least now that I know." We sat there in an uncomfortable silence for a moment. "Daddy, I want you to know that I plan to call Allison sometime today and tell her everything. Please let me do it," he stated in a desperate tone. "I should be the one to tell her." "Maybe, but I have the right to tell her. I have to make sure that nothing happens to Flower. While you mean well, I have to do this so that I have peace of mind." He nodded. "I understand, Junquenette." "I'm glad that you do,"
"Can we still spend time together?" he asked. "We lost so many years. All I want is a chance to get to know you again." I shook my head and sighed. "Daddy, I need to get through this first before I can answer that. I thought about it long and hard last night, and I think being in constant contact with you would hinder my healing process. We both need to heal separately before we can heal together." Marcella alluded to the same thing after you and Meredith left her office yesterday. She gave me the contact information for several doctors in North Carolina. I plan to find one who can see me immediately.
"That's a wonderful thing," I stood back up.
"Daddy, I don't mean to be rude, but I can't think of anything else to say to you right now." I glanced at the bedroom door. "Plus, I don't think it'd be wise for you to be here when Mama wakes up." He stood and headed for the door.
"I agree."
When he got to the doorway, he turned and said,
"Would it be too much if I asked for a hug, just in case it's the last one?"
I hesitated at first, and then embraced him tightly.
"Goodbye, Daddy."
When he let go of me, I spotted a tear in the corner of his right eye.
"Goodbye, Joan Gwinnett."
I watched him saunter down the hallway and close the door as he pushed the call button for the elevator. Chapter 40. Marcella. I decided to conduct the next therapy session at Joan Gwinnett's apartment. I wanted all the personalities to feel comfortable, and it was the obvious choice. I spoke to Jude first. She greeted me at the door. I knew it was her right away from the way she grinned at me and carried herself.
"Good morning, Jude," I said.
"Good morning, Marcella. Come on in. We've been expecting you."
"You sound mighty cheerful this morning."
Jude shrugged.
"What can I say? If you can't beat them, join them."
"So you realize there are others?" I asked.
"I know there's at least one.
When Joan Gwinnett came back into your office, so did I, and I heard everything she heard."
"I take that to mean you never knew about Henry's molestation of Joan Gwinnett."
Jude shook her head.
"No, I didn't. I just always knew I didn't like the bastard."
"It seems that my actions now have been justified," she laughed. "At least I didn't attempt to outright kill him. If I had, I wouldn't have missed."
I chuckled.
"No, I don't suppose you would have."
Jude walked over to the window and peered out.
"I've been giving this a lot of consideration. Joan's been through a lot."
"Yes, she has.
And you've been there for her when she needed you most."
"But now she doesn't need me anymore. Is that what you're getting at?"
"You tell me.
Does she still need you?"
"I hate to admit this, but I suppose not. That doesn't mean I'm going away completely, though. I might just stop doing all the bad things I've been doing and let Joan make all the decisions."
"So you admit that you've been doing bad things?"
"Of course. I won't even attempt to sugarcoat it. Jude was boring, simple as that. I had to do something adventurous to make life bearable. But now that she's dating this Mason dude, who's all right, by the way, things are looking up."
"You like Mason?"
"He's growing on me, slowly. He's romantic, and that's a good sign. I believe that he loves Joan, and I know for a fact that she loves him. Who am I to interfere with what could be the love affair of the century?"
"I'm delighted to hear you say that, Jude." I walked over to her and placed my hand on her shoulder. For once, she didn't yank it away from me.
"Jude, I know that this has been hard on you. You're a person just like Joan Gwinnett and Jetta."
"I meant what I said before," Jude stated, turning to look at me.
"I never set out to hurt Joan Gwinnett. I love her. But I had to do what I had to do. And as far as the sex, that was my escape."
"I understand perfectly.
Marcella, I've made up my mind."
"Yes, I've definitely made it up.
I'm going to let Joan live her life the way she wants to."
Jude actually seemed excited as she spoke the words.
"She deserves it. She's been through enough."
She paused and added,
"I can't speak for this Jetta person, though. I don't even know her ass, but I like her."
We both laughed.
"I don't think Jetta will be surfacing anytime soon, Jude.
She spoke her mind and accomplished what she set out to do. At least, that's the way I view it. But I could always be wrong.
No, Marcella, you're right, Jude said smugly.
I have confidence in you, but don't get it twisted.
She poked me in the arm.
If someone starts fucking with my girl, I will be back to handle things.
I have no doubt that you will, I stated honestly. I'll try to make sure that no one fucks with Junquenette ever again.
Jude hugged me, which truly shocked me, and whispered in my ear, good looking out.
She headed down the hall to the bedroom.
I'm tired. I need to lie down for a while.
Are you okay? I called after her.
She turned and winked at me.
I'm just fine.
We all are.
I decided to stay at Junquenette's apartment to see what happened. Mason knocked on the door, and I introduced myself to him. We chatted quietly in the living room for a few minutes, but I refused to go into detail since I was still sworn to protect the privacy of my patients. I listened to him comment on things that Joan had obviously revealed to him, but I refused to expound upon them. Mason seemed like a wonderful man, and I could see why Junquenette was so in love with him. Most people would not deal with such a difficult situation, but Mason swore that he had no plans to go anywhere. In fact, he told me that he had one day planned to marry Junquenette. I encouraged him to put that on hold until she had time to heal. He agreed to wait. I let him out and sat down on the sofa, staring at the ceiling and pondering the events of the past several days. I wish Dr. Driggs was still alive so I could seek his advice. I had a call in to another dear friend of mine in Florida. He was on vacation, but his secretary assured me that I would be his first phone call upon his return. Either way, with or without another doctor to consult, I was determined to help Junquenette. An hour later, I heard the bedroom door creak open and I sat up, waiting to see who would emerge. As soon as she came around the corner, I knew it was Junquenette. She looked refreshed and had this glow about her.
How about we go out to dinner? I suggested. It would be a good thing for us to get out of this environment for a little while.
Junquenette smiled.
I'm starved.
Where shall we go?
How about Justin's? I heard the food's fantastic, and I've never been.
Me either. Sounds good to me.
Just let me get my coat.
Great, we'll take my car.
Junquenette and I had a lovely dinner at Justin's and talked about the future. Her future.
Epilogue. Junquenette. Ever since the onset of my integration, I must admit that it's been difficult to accept that I am all alone now. It's weird because I never really knew them. I just knew that sometimes I simply wasn't there. I was finally able to become strong enough to stand alone. A lot of it had to do with making sure that Flower didn't suffer the same fate as me. All those years, Jude and Jetta existed to protect me. Now it's my time to protect Flower. Daddy is getting the help that he needs. It is still difficult to forgive, and it is impossible to forget. So much pain was caused by his actions, a chain reaction to pain that he endured at an early age himself. Flower's mother won't allow Dad to see her at all. She said that in time she might agree to supervised visits. I decided not to press charges. There was nothing to be gained by that because Daddy has an illness. He's not a criminal. Mason and I are still going strong. He has hinted around about marriage, but I'm not ready. I have so much more I have to figure out about myself now that I'm in complete control of all of my actions. Darnetta is still mad at me and not speaking, but that's her prerogative. There will be no more apologies coming from me, and I refuse to allow her to make me find another job. If she truly hates me, she can find one, because times are hard. I still go to see Dr. Spencer. I plan to keep my weekly appointments for as long as necessary. Marcella said there is a chance that one or more alters might surface again, but only for a little while, and not to the degree that they did before. They would not have the same hold on me. She was honest with me by saying that it would take several years for me to become fully integrated. She said that my alters are still present, but all of us are just living together in harmony. I found that difficult to comprehend, but I didn't doubt it.
I let her know that I was in it for the long haul. Too many people think they don't need counseling when it's obvious that they do. It is not a sign of weakness, like so many tend to think. It is a sign of empowerment. Jude and Jetta, wherever you may be, thank you from the bottom of my heart. This concludes the reading of Nervous, a novel by Zane, copyright 2003 by Zane. This book was read by Nicole Small. This unabridged recording was published by arrangement with Atria Books, a division of Simon & Schuster Incorporated, and was produced in 2011 by Buck 50 Productions, LLC, for Blackstone Audio, Inc., which holds the copyright. Neither this recording nor any portion of it may be reproduced or used for any purpose without prior written authorization from Blackstone Audio, Inc.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.